Pretty exciting one last night once again, Corey. The Oil Kings get down 1-0 and storm back and never look back after that.
Yeah, and just hearing that stuff, that guy needs to tone it down a little bit. Holy cow.
No way. He needs to pump it up a couple notches.
Yeah, it was incredible, you know, down there watching the Oil Kings, you know, come into that game, Dean, and it was all business-like mentality. You know, it was weird coming off that loss in Game 6, and there's a lot of questions about can they ever bounce back from that the way they kind of thought. I mean, they said after the game they blew it. They had a chance to win in Edmonton. They rallied back, you know, got down early, but it just they took over the hockey game in that second period, scoring 4 goals, and you know, they were the better team last night, and I think for the back half of the series, outside the first 2 games and probably the third period of Game 6, they were the better team and deserved the victory.
I thought in the first part of Game 6, Samuelson and Mraz really seemed to put the team on their back. Who was the guy for you, or the guys, or the line that really seemed to kickstart the team last night?
You know, I mean, Samuelson, Mraz, you can go to those guys, obviously. Mitch gets that big goal early in the second period to get them started. And you know, I really like the line of Riley Keyser, Matt Deller, and Luke Bertolucci. You know, they didn't produce a ton offensively. I know Bertolucci had a goal, and Eller had a huge one last night as well. And, you know, Eller probably drew about 6, 7, 8 penalties in that series of, you know, just with his speed, and Portland really had no answer for it. So, you know, I thought those guys ate up a lot of minutes as well, you know, controlled the puck in the offensive zone and just, you know, stymied that Portland offense, you know, by keeping them in their own zone. So, you know, I really like what they did. But, I mean, honestly, guys, there weren't any passengers last night. You know, everybody got to touch the ice a little bit here and there. And, you know, you go from the top to the bottom, everybody chipped in. And I thought it was a real nice team performance.
That line, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they remind me of players from the past. And a Bertolucci reminds me of a bit of a Stefan Legault a little bit. And Mads Eller reminds me a little bit of Christian Pelz, just with the speed and the tenaciousness on the forecheck, and Riley Keyser is kind of that Trevor Cheek veteran type player kind of guy. Do you get the sense from those guys that they remind you a little bit of those veteran players?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, you need your 20-year-old guys like Keyser to be that kind of player. And you mentioned Cheek. You can, I mean, throw Rachinsky or Jordan
right,
Kettle in the
right,
mix
when
yes. They won the championship. You know, he kind of has a lot of those characteristics. And, you know, I've been praising Riley Keyser for a long time here around this team, is the way he handles himself. And he became a key cog to this team. And then you're right with Eller, you know, he kind of looks a little bit like Christian Pelz out there at times. The speed even has that little wobble at times when he gets
right.
Top speed. And then the big shot as well. So, and Bertolucci, just a consummate guy that just works his tail off. And you're right, I think he kind of does draw comparisons to Legault, and a guy that stepped up in the playoffs. I mean, Bertolucci's numbers not quite as high as Legault's were, but, you know, still a guy that come playoff time you can rely upon to really, you know, just to put in a good effort and not never stop moving his feet and, you know, just generate offensive chances and penalties.
Yeah, that's because he didn't have a 7-point game.
Yeah, well, that's true.
not everybody has that. Mentioned Christian Pelz, and I asked this to Peter Labardius a couple of Saturdays ago on All Sports Weekend, and just how much play for Pelz he meant to this team and how much it may be inspired. And we saw the jersey out there last night, and we saw Mitch Mraz get a little bit emotional in his post-game interview, and for good reason. You know, these guys were so close to him, and it's such a still such a tragedy that Christian Pelz isn't with us anymore. But how much do you think that motivated and spurred these guys on, maybe when they were facing some adversity?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a lot. You know, it's you're right, just how closely knit that he was with some of those guys, especially I think the Oilers draft picks that kind of knew him a little bit more as well, going to camps and stuff like that. And, you know, I know that even the younger players on the team that didn't have a chance to play with him really bought into the whole spirit of it. And, you know, seeing that jersey on the ice again last night and, you know, just talking to Mitch in the hallway after and, you know, seeing him break down a little bit. And I mean, it means a lot. And, you know, I think it's just, I mean, Dean, I know you were around Christian Pelz, just his spirit and the way he was.
Yeah.
Such a energetic kid that you can't help but, you know, have a smile on your face when you think about him. So I know the team really kind of embraced that, and, you know, good on the training staff for bringing the jersey on the road and having it up in the room, and, you know, the guys for bringing it out on the ice afterwards. That, you know, is a really nice touch.
Yeah, it was with them the whole time, the whole season, wasn't it?
Yeah, they always had it around, and, you know, I know the guys everywhere on the inside of their jerseys, their gloves, and something was, you know, Rogan Dean, their equipment manager, sewed it in pretty much everywhere. And, you know, it's been their hashtag, it's been their kind of their policy, I guess, for the team this year, and they've really, you know, they've embraced it. Not always, you know, overtly loud, but it's always
right.
been there behind the scenes.
2012, this team wasn't expected to win, and they did, and they celebrated, as rightfully so. Do you notice, or did you notice last night, the celebration? Not that it was muffled, but maybe subdued a little bit by some of the veterans. I know they want to enjoy it a little bit, but the guys that went to the MasterCard Memorial Cup in 2012, the Mraz, Lazar, Reinhardt, Samuelson, you know, even Tristan Jarry to an extent, but the players that were there before that realize they have another mountain to climb, are they taking this in stride a little bit, knowing that they have to still get up for another tournament?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Peter Labardius. I remember talking to him right before that tournament started, and he told me that, you know what, until you've done it a second time, you don't really understand what you're getting yourself into. And, I mean, he even was talking to me as a broadcaster, just all the extra stuff around that tournament and all the media stuff and how many distractions there are for the players. So, you know, I know the guys, even was mentioned on the bus today that, you know, this isn't a vacation. The guys that were there before, they know what to expect, and they know how much they have to focus now. And, you know, it's kind of a bonus round for sure, but still, I mean, there's a huge prize out there now that, you know, it's probably one of the harder trophies to win. You have to win four rounds of your playoffs just to get there, and then, you know, a round-robin tournament as well. So, and you only have the option between 16 and 20 to really earn it. So there's not a lot of opportunities to earn that big trophy. So, you know, I think the guys, you're right, Dean, the guys that have been there before have already kind of started talking a little bit about just getting there and focusing and, you know, trying to shut out all those distractions that are around that thing. It's such a big event, and, you know, I'm sure London's going to have everything going as, you know, big time all over the place, so there'll be lots of different things to kind of get caught up in a little bit, to kind of catch you wide-eyed a bit, but I think it's good for the Oil Kings they don't play the first game as well this time around. They can kind of sit back and sort of see what it's all like before they jump on the ice, but yeah, that's definitely been in the back of their minds that, you know, they're not done yet, and that's, you know, that was stressed last night after the game as well.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think it's huge that they don't play the opener. I think, you know, I know they did in Shawinigan, and I know they beat the Cataract, and then they stumbled after that. But I think not playing in the first game, you don't have to deal with the host and all the hype and all the energy in the building. You get a chance to get settled, especially having played last night and traveling tomorrow. I just think it gives you a little bit more of an option of getting settled, and really, really important, not having to play the host team in the first game when there's so much energy in the building and things like that. I just think it's great scheduling-wise, and you get the two Ontario teams out of the way right away.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good to kind of get there and kind of get away from the hoopla and just focus on the actual game and, you know, to be able to see what the Quebec team, whoever it's going to be, come tonight, and London kind of go through it. And then playing Guelph, who's, I would think on paper, probably going to be the favorite heading into this thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, considering it's an OHL rink and it's an OHL team, they might be the, I mean, Edmonton might be the kind of the team that gets the crowd support a little bit more, I would think, with, you know, fans of the OHL not being fans of, or fans, I guess, of London not cheering for Guelph and cheering for their home team. So they might get a little bit extra boost there from the London fans for that game.
Yeah, and Guelph knocked out London, so they might not be very happy. This text message just coming in, was that Rod Phillips with a call there? Great play-by-play, Corey. Awesome. Go Kings. So the fan support for the Oil Kings certainly building as we go. Griffin Reinhart named playoff MVP last night. I know there were some worthy candidates, people thinking Henrik Samuelsson, one texter thinking Curtis Lazar, but the way Griffin shut down the top players on the Portland Winterhawks team, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't know if Taylor Lear scored a goal. I'm not sure if Patan and those guys did very much. I don't think they did very much. And a lot of it comes down to Griffin Reinhart's stick, his reach, his ability to take guys out of the play and still stay in the play was just phenomenal.
Yeah, you know what? You know, one of the guys that gets to vote on that award, it was tough to pick who was going to be number one. And, you know, it's an award for the entire playoffs, not just the championship series. So to me, that kind of swayed it for Reinhardt. And I mean, hey, you're right, he shut down everybody. Patan didn't score for the third straight final. You know, Leipzig wasn't as offensive. Bjorkstrand just got the one goal in game seven there at the end. And, you know, Taylor Lear didn't get much going either. And it was mostly Portland's defenders that scored on shots kind of that bounced in from the line with all kinds of screens and traffic in front of Tristan Jarry. So, you know, Jarry was a candidate. Lazar, I mean, Samuelsson had a huge final round after only scoring two goals in the first three rounds. He exploded against the Winterhawks. So, you know, there were a lot of names there, but just the way, you know, Dean, I know you've watched Reinhardt play for a long time as well, and just where this guy's come to and how good he is right now. I mean, there's not a defenseman in this league that matches up with Griffin Reinhardt. I mean, he just dominates games, and it's a domination you don't notice unless you really watch. And I think that's from a guy that plays like him, that's what you want. You don't need to notice that guy all the time, but at the end of the night, when you look at the scoring chances for and against, and you see who was on the ice for them, it's like, oh, well, another day where Reinhardt just is dominant out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was a fun game to watch last night. I can't wait for things to get going. We've switched things around a little bit here on the weekend, all sports weekend, because the game on Saturday is being moved to Sunday. So we're going to have a two-hour pregame show, basically, on Sunday, right before the All-King game. So I'm sure I'll tap on you to come on the show and pregame and preview the matchup. So I can't wait to talk to you about that from London. Make sure Guy Flaming doesn't leave anything on the road this time and doesn't steal anybody's luggage, okay? Everything came back from Portland okay?
Yeah, what a train wreck he's been. Holy cow. He left his wallet here in Edmonton, left his phone in Portland, got it back, took, Richard Dirksen's bag off the airplane. Oh, man.
I didn't hear about the wallet.
Oh, yeah. We get down to Portland, and he had to go return something to the store, and he went to grab his wallet, and yet it was in his car sitting back here in Edmonton. So he's just 3 for 3 there, but hopefully that's all cleared up now. Yeah, well, I can't take that guy anywhere.
The wallet's not a big deal because he never pays for anything anyway, so...
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Corey, great call last night. Awesome job, and enjoy it. Have fun with it. But I know that there's a lot of business for this team still to take care of. We'll be listening, and we'll be cheering right along with the Edmonton Oil Kings. Enjoy the flight down there, and have fun in London.
All right, Dino. Thanks for the time. Talk to you later this week.